Darren Jones was a completely unique and irreplaceable individual. He was one of the most kind, gentle people you'd ever meet. At the same time, one of the most amazing artistic and virtuosic musicians you'd ever meet.
One of the most serene and gracious people, yeah, that I've ever met.
He seemed to have a real connection to the source, and his music had a divine quality to it a lot of the time. And I think a lot of people would agree with me there.
He gave the impression of being genuinely happy to see you and genuine love for everybody. And I think there must be hundreds of people, and I've met one of them who considered Darren one of their best friends.
It would take a while to get to know him, because he wasn't someone who just laid everything out in the open, and you could tell there was a lot going on. Thought-wise, an intuitive, very intuitive person.
He, as a human being and a friend and a confidant with somebody, and a musician obviously, was somebody you could really look up to. I mean, this guy was a pure soul.
He just had a wonderful energy about him where to be around him, you felt good, and people just flocked to him as he went through life and networked and met more and more people.
He was just, he would open, his heart was so open, and you just don't meet many people like that in your life. That was Darren.
On a blue sky morning in late February 2006, Hills musician Darren Jones smilingly embraced his companion Kate and their two-year-old son, Jet. He gathered his guitar and went on to catch the morning train to Flinders Street Station. No one could have imagined that he would never return. Darren Jones had started a three-year program in music improvisation at the prestigious Victorian College of the Arts the week before. When his morning classes were over, he returned to Flinders Street, where he boarded the 12:35 train to Belgrave in the Dandenong Ranges, where he lived. As the train approached Box Hill Station, a young man with a long history of amphetamine use and mental illness walked silently down the train carriage towards where Darren Jones was sitting with his guitar by his side. He was quietly reading some sheet music. The young man suddenly pulled out a hunting knife and, in a completely unprovoked attack, stabbed Darren several times just as the train pulled in to Box Hill Station. Though he was bleeding profusely, Darren Jones somehow managed to get himself out of the carriage and onto the platform, where he collapsed. He died within minutes. A little later, fellow passengers who had witnessed the event noticed his attacker eating at a fast food stall. He was arrested by the police soon after. In the time since Darren Jones was killed in 2006, knife attacks have become increasingly common in urban spaces around Australia. In this program, we will learn how such events can sear an entire community. We will come to know a little more about the nature of Darren Jones through the voices of those who loved him. And we will hear some of the extraordinary music created by the beautiful bohemian Darren Jones and his circle of talented musicians.
mind is it dripping down your face? You can't seem to place it. Sorry and displeased. Could it be so unkind?
Darren's first school reports when he was in prep grade one, there was his school report came home that because he had accepted a little boy, Bobby, that all the other kids had accepted him as well. And I asked Darren what was different about Bobby, and he just said he didn't know. Well, Bobby had mild cerebral palsy, and just Darren didn't see any difference in him to anybody else, and that's really how Darren always was. He just accepted people as they were.
Children felt it, adults felt it of all ages. He drew older, much older people into his environment, very young people. I was a lot older than Darren, almost double his age, and yet there was never, it was a timeless relationship with Darren. I think pretty much everyone had that with him.
On a musical level, as far as I go as well, like, Darren tapped into the best parts of me, and he made me realise the best parts of me that I didn't really think were even parts of me, you know what I mean? Like, he was able to draw out parts of me that I didn't even know existed. Yeah.
Kate's fantastic. Her support of Darren was amazing. Like, he was a great musician, and Kate was a huge support, and I don't know how many people realise what a great little unit it was. And Jet, beautiful boy, and they loved each other. You know, like, you know, saw Darren and Jet drawing pictures and the time and walking, doing backwards walking and things like that. You know, Jet and Darren had a pretty good relationship.
Daz loved being a dad. Absolutely loved it. And he just embraced it. And was everything that a young father should be and could be.
He also had the light and the truth and the honour. You know, all those beautiful gifts are not always in a lot of musicians. Musicians can be incredibly temperamental and moody, and we borderline on being a little bit loopy and insane, and, you know, we're strange beings. But Darren was very, very balanced, very clear, very tuned in, tapped in, turned on to everything. So I think, yeah, he could have sailed anywhere.
He was an oldest piece, and if you listen to his guitar playing, some of the probably came out of the guitar more than it actually came out of him. He was usually controlled as a personality, but then when he launched into a solo, what came out of the amplifier was sort of like, whoa, there's obviously a bit more going on underneath there than we thought. We'll be right back. first of all, he had great tone. So just the way his fingers hit the string produced a magic tone. And then as a soloist, he would... His solos are great because he would structure a solo in a way where it would start usually simply and then build up to something. He always had an angle and a direction that he was going in. So, and that's the hard thing I think people find about soloing in general as a musician is like, what are you going to do with this solo? But I always think Darren was more or less thinking melodically rather than relying on some... not saying he didn't have a technical foundation, he had a lot of technique as well, but he had an overall feeling of what the song was or where he was going with his guitar playing that more or less makes me think that his solos were almost like a song unto themselves, so that you could literally sing his solos as a melodic statement that went over a certain period of time and built up and had a direction. So, which is... That's the hard thing to do as a soloist and as a player, is to have that broad sort of vision while you're improvising.
Involved in a Christian church when the children were little, and Darren always sat with the musos with his shaker and always believed that he was a muso from, you know, two years old sort of up.
I think, in fact, I know very well for a fact that a lot of his musical influence came directly from his, more so from his father, but from his mother and father's taste in music and for their massive appreciation of music and their endless amounts of vinyl that got played on the turntable constantly throughout his childhood.
Glenn has got an expansive collection of vinyl with a lot of rare music of all different styles, you know, from, you know, folk music to full-on psychedelic rock, you know, from the sort of, you know, late 60s and early 70s. So Darren presumably would have grown up listening to a lot of that, and also Glenn's father, Kingsley, his grandfather, was an accomplished jazz trumpeter and flugelhorn player, so presumably he would have been exposed to jazz trumpet. Well, he was, and Darren's mother, and obviously, you know, Darren as a nipper would often sort of follow Kingsley around, and you know, Kingsley was a very very curious character for Darren as a little boy, and that interest in music for Darren went back to for as long as they can remember.
He was able to draw on commonly used musical vocabulary and, you know, just use it in the right place at the right time. So when he played a blues solo, it would sound really, really bluesy. When he played a solo in a funk tune, it would just bring out the funkiness of the music. And if he played a jazz tune, it would be really rich jazz language that he kind of drew on. And I think when he played original music as well, he would play to the song without ego, without a feeling that I have to show off here. He would more, you know, create the guitar part to bring out the bass part or to complement the vocals to really do the song justice.
The answer that understands the voice of a rhythm, melody in your hands.
Well, it was always magic, really, playing music with Darren, because he could just happily play a very simple piece of music and lock into a groove and feeling, and then it just suddenly go off into this amazing kind of virtuosic realms, like psychedelic colours in his solos and so forth.
One of the many beautiful paradoxes of Darren Jones is this, such a gentle, unassuming character, until he strapped on that Stratocaster, and then he just like pin you against the wall, you know, that kind of a thing. You know? Ferocious for such a gentle fellow, is it? I can actually recall so joking with Darren one night before he was about to start at VCA, actually, I was saying, "Oh, Darren, you know, you're not going to VCA to learn anything. You're just going there to refine what you already know," because it was already there, you know. But I think in terms of picking up a little more on the music theory and making contacts and that kind of thing, it was certainly beneficial for him, yeah.
He auditioned there and very rightfully got in, which is a very competitive thing to get into, because there's like sometimes 70 guitarists and only about 3 places. But Darren got in because of his brilliant ability. And then, yeah, his teacher remarked to me that he was just sort of amazed at how brilliant he was, and is just thinking, why haven't I met this guy before?
And he never really thought of himself as being, a finished piece of work. And he always was searching for new things to do. And I think he just thought, well, that would be a great place to go, and something will come out of that, and I'll expand my knowledge in other ways. So that's where he was coming from. And those elements of music, more jazz-oriented stuff and improvisational elements, were starting to fuse into his sound already, even before he went to VCA. And he already had all the fundamental building blocks that make a great guitar player. They were already there. So he was just using it as, extra inspiration.
The potential there was to really to go on a journey that would have been, I wish it had come to fruition, to be honest, because it would be mind-blowing for any music lovers or listeners or fans of Darren Jones, for that matter.
So, in a sense, what's been lost is not just, not just Darren's opportunity to spend time and further grow and develop as a musician, but the opportunity for other musicians to grow and develop.
When I received the the fateful telephone call from Denise. And I can remember exactly what she said too. She said, "Dan, you better sit down, because I've got something awful to tell you, and I think it's best you sit down." And then I knew something terrible. I mean, obviously, I knew something terrible happened. I didn't know who it was or the exact nature of it. So I sat down and she said, "Darren's dead. He was killed today on the train." I mean, I didn't believe what I was hearing. In fact, I mean, I think my first reaction was one of total and utter disbelief. And I just said to her, "No, they've got it wrong. It's mistaken identity." Because I'm thinking, Darren was the most, possibly the most universally loved person I've ever met. He'd never caused trouble with anybody. I mean, how could it's just totally and utterly inconceivable. And that's why I didn't believe it. In fact, I think I said that. "Oh, are you sure?" I think that's what I said to Denise. "Oh, are you sure it's Darren?" And she goes, "Yeah, I'm at their house now with Kate and Glenn Scalia, and the police are here now in the kitchen." And I think that's when that disbelief started to break down, and the true gravity of the situation hit me, at which point we sort of ended the phone call, and I think and then I went to the bathroom and threw up.
So I was in complete shock and don't think it really sunk in at all until I saw his body, which was a very important thing to do, because before that I was just not believing it at all, not feeling anything. And then it's been a very slow process to really feel the immensity of what's happened.
Do anything to encourage the situation. He didn't know the person. He was just sitting in his space, reading his music, going into that beautiful world of where he just wanted to grow and evolve and give, and he was just in that peaceful space, and that was taken from him. Absolutely no reason. That was the thing, I think, that messed with so many people, that hurt us so intensely, that someone could take him that way. This just was wrong. Everything about it was wrong, and everyone felt it to the nth degree. Pack his bags and move on.
Belgrave had been punched rock solid flat from a massive fist. That's how I would describe it. Just heavy hearts absolutely everywhere. And nothing being said, really. Nothing really had to be said, I don't think. But that's vivid in my memory, for sure.
from that moment on, as we all started to inform all our friends of what had happened, the Aztec Bar became the nurturing space for everyone. That place was absolutely chock-a-block, day in, day out, probably for about 6 weeks. Glenn, who was managing the Aztec Bar at the time, had just made it open house, which was the most amazing thing. We'd lost an incredibly fine musician who had spread himself amongst all the musicians on the mountain, and I do mean openly spread himself with everyone. He wanted to engage with all the different singers and drummers and bass players, and he had really created a network, an amazing network of a musical family.
It had already broken everybody. I could tell just from the vibrations and the energy in her voice that the entire community had been completely and utterly broken from it. And it's one of those things where you kind of, when you get a phone call like that from one of your mates, the initial reaction is, you're joking. Now, come on. That's not funny. You know, now, where's the punchline? But that was it. That was the punchline, and it was realer than anything.
I think everybody was in a state of shock. It was really bizarre. It was a bizarre atmosphere. And, you know, people were crying and people were talking, and everybody was just saying, I can't believe it. Like, what's going on? How can this be true? And as the night sort of wore on, I think from memory, maybe a few people got up and started playing some really mellow music, and people started talking about Darren. And after a few hours, you know, the shock started to subside, and some small degree of acceptance dawned, and we all just talked about how, you know, what an amazing person Darren was, and how we couldn't believe that he was really gone.
One of the things that happened was, you know, seeing the people in the community shine. You know, there was a bunch of people, including Kate, who were just inspirational to me, to come out and see how everybody else was coping. You know, I was sort of reeling myself, and you see everybody individually was just absolutely reeling, but the way everybody stood up to support everybody else, I think it was healing. So that community, that's what became more important.
I sort of swing between wanting to kill the guy and wanting to just forgive him because he's lost his mind.
You know, for a long time I was just veering between sort of anger and utter confusion and disbelief. But I can recall times just being absolutely consumed in my anger. Yeah, I've had an enormous amount of anger to work through.
inspired me. So I guess in a way it just inspired me more to do what I wanted to do with my life instead of what people told me to do. So I quit my job the next day and just decided to get back into, well, not back into playing, because I was playing with Darren, but focus on it a lot more, and then also prepare myself for being a father. So when Darren passed, I mean, the first few weeks, I don't think there was a day where I was sober, but after that, I actually stayed and set myself up in a studio with Heath King for a pretty long period there, and just recorded music every day and played songs for Darren.
Sitting on the world tonight, watching time pass by. I feel her as she watches me with a tear in her eye. Bloodstain on the mother, all gone soon. The bloodstain. Can someone do something like that? But it happens every day. The world's all pretty fucked up place, but it happens every day. It just doesn't happen to you or your best mate. So, you know, I hope he doesn't do it again and all that sort of rah-rah, but what do? The world's full of dickheads that go around doing crazy shit. And, you know?
Very, very painful. I think the way it happened too, the unjustness of it, didn't seem right for someone that was so true and so beautiful with life and so free. And, you know, I can't say enough how he didn't judge, he didn't dislike, he always found a way through everything. And when you lose someone like that, it's such a big hole out of your soul. And the music, you know, losing the music was really, really sad.
And because of the way that it happened, if it had have been a car accident with some other kind of circumstances to it, or if it had have been of natural causes, or if there had have been some other explanation, it may not have had such a severe impact. But when somebody's taken, when a beloved person is taken in such a cruel and heinous act as murder, it leaves endless amounts of questions as to why.
Darren's death, for me, was a turning point in the way that I view the world and the way that I see things working in the world and in the universe. I've always been a real believer in a universal current that sort of pushes human experience in a certain direction, and that we're on the Earth for a reason, and we have lessons to learn and things to achieve, tasks. But when Darren died, it made me question that understanding on a really fundamental level, and I have to say I haven't returned to it.
I think that within my personal framework, this event does make sense, as bizarre as it may sound, but in life there is a lot of suffering and a lot of hardship and a lot to forgive, and at the end of the day it's our responsibility to work on what we go through.
Yo, this one here's a love song. When you got love, you need a song.
The whole time I was there, I would just think. I kept thinking of what would Darren think? What would Darren think about this guy and this situation, and how would he feel? And I couldn't help but feel and think that Daz would he would forgive this guy. You know, that was just the type of person he was. It wouldn't matter.
You know, I think he's such a giving God. Yeah, for Darren to give all that he would have had to give. You know, maybe this is what had to happen, you know, to give all the gifts that he needed to give to everybody. I think one of the things our community has grown in a lot of ways, you see, you know, some of the musical projects and my art. I know I painted a lot afterwards. I don't know, for maybe Darren's to perhaps make sense of it, maybe have thought about it, you know, like that maybe what had been happened to give the gifts that he had to give to everybody or something. But look, let's not waste the memory of Darren Jones. Let's remember it and rejoice and use his inspiration and his passion to make our lives better. And you know, let's keep an eye out for Jet and Kate, not only Jet and Kate, and the whole family and nieces and nephews and friends and family. And you know, remember Darren with a smile.
The way I view my role in the world as a human being, you know, and like drawing from knowing Darren and what he had to offer the world, it's, yeah, I guess it's made me
feel like I need to be a better person, you know. And it's made me really, really look at myself in ways that I've probably never looked at myself before. Yeah.
You sort of feel like you've come to terms with what's happened to some degree. And then, but then it just rocks you all over again.
Not really understanding it and such a violent nature of Darren's murder, because that's what it was, he didn't die, he was murdered, has really brought through some, definitely questions of mortality, questions of existence and that. I think people have those a lot of the time anyway, but for myself, it's definitely brought it to the forefront of my mind. I think the angst for me is possibly not being able to deal with it, or not being able to understand why, or any of those sort of probably more negative things, to be honest. But and people have said to me, you know, Darren wouldn't be happy that we're feeling like this towards this guy. But I can tell you right now, Darren's not happy he's not here. Well, I feel that Darren would not be happy that he's not here. And I'm not happy that he's not here. And I don't. Everyone's got issues and excuses. I'm not really happy with his, i.e. that being the guy that murdered Darren. But I felt, and I think still feeling blatantly violent about it, to be honest. I could rip this joint apart.
I think Coriacuna is part of a bigger picture, and there's a lot of different factors, but I think a big thing is the closing down of a lot of mental institutions and putting a lot of patients out into the community, which I know it's not black and white, but I do think that some people are on the streets who really shouldn't be. And Coriacuna had said he felt like killing someone to a counsellor a few months before killing Darren, and yet he was still out on the streets. I don't think that's right, personally.
I think Mango's kind of shifted from being directed towards Acuna to being more looking at the kind of a society that we're living in that created somebody like Acuna, and the failings in terms of successive governments, in terms of dealing with both the Aboriginal people in this country and the way we deal with the mentally ill.
There is an inquiry which I need to find out more on how that's gone, on why he was out on the street at that time when he'd shown signs of not coping, why he was out there. I think that so much was ready to come out of Darren in such a beautiful environment, such a perfect musical environment. I just know that he was just itching to explore and go as far as he possibly could. He could only have just continued to shine bigger and brighter every single day. I think the impact that he would have had musically on this country and perhaps even the world would have been quite intense.
I reckon he really enjoyed sitting down with kids, so I could imagine him teaching a lot. But also looking at his talent and just how amazing of a person he was as well, I just couldn't help but see or imagine him really going somewhere with it too. Like, you know, I'm sure he'd get a lot of offers just with his talent alone. To play with various bands and yeah, so I could see him sort of, I guess, travelling as well, maybe later on when Jet's older, but also, you know, maybe while Jet's growing up, just staying at home and teaching.
I think I could almost see him now definitely as a teacher of some description, teaching younger generations music and love and conscientiousness.
I was already imagining that I would be playing with Darren for the next 20 years, the next 30 years, you know, and doing musical projects together and sitting in on each other's gigs and generally collaborating well into the future for years and years and years, because I felt an immense musical connection with Darren. And that's what I feel has been snatched away. I didn't get a chance to fully fulfill all of the possibilities, and never will now.
Yeah, you know, I just try and keep the central elements that I appreciated about Darren, and hope that his personality and character and musicianship as well, all of those elements continue to draw upon him as a just an inspiration for the rest of my life. And that's something you just carry around with you from day to day.
Well, you know, look, now at the time it was a pretty hard time, but now I just feel very, very blessed to have been in the position where I was and got to meet so many wonderful people, and not only his musician friends, but his school friends and his family, and people from painters, and just this amazing array of people who just genuinely loved Darren, and I think too Darren genuinely loved and who were touched by him before he died. You know, like, that's the story of Darren was while he was alive, the peace and that. I don't know, it's really hard to describe it in that way.
There's got to come a time where people do really reflect in the right way and bring out of this situation, I think, what Darren would have wanted people to get out of it in the first place, because I believe he lived his life in order to really impart lessons of a Buddhist style or a Christ-like nature. I've said it before, and I've probably upset some people with that description or confused some people with that description, but you know, for a non-religious non-influenced by scripture, non-influenced by orthodoxy and non-influenced by authority style person, he was the closest thing to a pure spirit that anybody could ever imagine.
Thank you.
Darren also had a strong love and bond for Indigenous Australians. He'd had a didgeridoo made for him by a good friend of his. He'd learnt to play didge, he did the circular breathing, and on a school camp that he went to in Year 12 Central Australia tour, he had to be dragged away back to school camp because he was having so much fun just playing with some Indigenous people that he'd met and just making music with them and enjoying their company. And it's quite ironic that he was murdered by an Aboriginal because of his love for them. And Corey actually killed his brother in spirit.
We need to be stirred up in this life. We need to be reminded of the things that really make us feel and really make us look at what's out in our world, you know? And yes, it has its really dark side, which causes a lot of pain and anguish. And then it can take a flip and I can put an album on, you know, that's got him on it. And just cry tears of joy. I don't feel the pain. I know he doesn't want us to feel the pain. I'm sure he wouldn't. So I'll go for the backflip every time and find joy in the music. And he's left that, hey. He's left that with the world.